Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Punatu, Sahavirayankara Vavahai, Tejasvinamahi Tamastoma Vidyavishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 71. The BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the Lord's potencies mentioned in these verses. Shri is the potency of wealth, Pushti, that of strength, Gir, knowledge, Kanti, beauty, Kirti, fame, and Tushti, renunciation. Wealth, strength, knowledge, beauty, fame, and renunciation. Okay, so that's the six opulences, yeah. These are the Lord's... The next sentence. These are the Lord's six opulences. Ila is his Bhushakti, also known as Sandini. That doesn't make sense. 27. Srila Sanatana Goswami points out that Shri is situated on his chest. She controls all wealth. The others are controllers of various quarters. Pushti nourishes the body. Tushti nourishes the mind. Tushti. Renunciation. Ghi controls words in general. Okay. Ila controls prayers. Urja is the Shakti of the senses. Ila is his Bhushakti, also known as Sundani, the internal potency of whom the element earth is an expansion. Urja is his internal potency performing pastimes. Okay, so they're taking it like that. She expands as the Tulsi plant in this world. Vidya and avidya, knowledge and ignorance, are external potencies who cause the living entities liberation and bondage, respectively. Shakti is his internal pleasure potency, Hladini, and Maya is an internal potency who is the basis of vidya and avidya. The word cha implies the presence of the Lord's marginal energy. The jiva is Shakti, who is subordinate to Maya. Lord Vishnu is being served by all these personified potencies. Okay. So then they're taking here Bhu from the element up, from the point of the it means the environment. And then there's the pastimes performed on that environment. Sukadeva Goswami continued, as the great devotee Akura beheld all this, he became extremely pleased and felt enthused with transcendental devotion. His intense ecstasy caused his bodily hairs to stand on end and tears to flow from his eyes, drenching his entire body. Somehow managing to steady himself, Akura bowed his head to the ground. Then he joined his palms in supplication and, in a voice choked with emotion, very slowly and attentively began to pray. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, seeing this, Akura thought, our Krishna is this form, the Supreme Lord. Vishnu Purana says, Bala Krishna Tada Krura Pratyabhi Shaya Vishmita. Understanding the identity of Balarama Krishna, Akura was astonished. Conclusion. Although nothing is unattainable for one who has satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. Lord Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. Being pleased with his pure devotee, he can offer whatever the devotee desires, but the pure devotee does not ask anything from the Lord for his personal benefit. Right, so we see even the gopis, their interest is not about what they'll gain, it's about Krishna, because if they're serving Krishna, if he goes, then that service cannot be rendered. So then he will miss out on that pleasure that comes from that interaction. Yes.
saw Goakula, he saw that how residents of Vrindavan, they deal with Krishna, then his ecstasy came from his meditation on the forearm of Krishna, actually. That's his experience. Mm.
Because that's the point in Dwarka, then they see Paramatma as, you know, as who's living with them. The Supreme Lord has come and he's living with them, because the Supreme Lord is wonderful, but they have closer relations than they would in Vaikuntha. But it's still considered an aspect of Vaikuntha. You have Braj and then you have Vaikuntha. So from Mathura on down, that's all Vaikuntha.
Because there's a description, I'm not sure if it will be mentioned in here, but then when Krishna actually enters Mathura,
yeah, it's forearms.
Forearms.
Yeah, because that's the point. That's from there, that's where, means you have Krishna and Balaram in Braj. Then outside of that, then you have Mahanarayan. Right? And then he expands this, the Chaturvyuha. So that is going to be Krishna and Balaram and Prajumna and Aniruddha in those pastimes. Yeah, you understand?
Yeah.
But the point is Vasudev always has that mood of Laila Krishna. Sankarshan always has that mood like Balaram. So even though technically they're expanding from Balaram, it's still personality-wise, it'll be the other way. You know, Balaram will be assistant to Krishna. Where were we?
Does that every time.
When the Krishna enters Mathura, he's got
forearms.
The
yes.
Expansion,
yes, because so, in other words, you always see is that as he goes, the Vasudeva feature of the Chaturvyuha will always be that person is Krishna. And Sankarshan, that will always be Balaram. Even though technically they're expanding from Balaram. But the point is, it's Krishna who's expanding as all these persons.
This is too much.
Yeah. So that's why you see Sankarshan is always assisting Vasudeva. Like that. But that's where it starts. That's why we're saying that Vaikuntha starts from there. So Dwarka is technically Vaikuntha. So Mathura, that whole thing, it's all Vaikuntha. It's just that it's Vaikuntha with five rasas instead of two.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, so Mathura and Dwarka, then they have the maximum field within the Vaikuntha. Then, how you say, Ayodhya restricts the conjugal, but not the others. And then Vaikuntha, then the others disappear. Right? So it's just Lakshmi, but it's not like it's open, it's just the position, because he's God naturally, he has his shaktis, and then, you know, that's how it works. So it's not that there's an opening for that. Everybody in Dasya Rasa and that, then they come and take part and assist within these things, but they're not like, how you say, expansions of those persons. Does that make sense? They're functioning as generic inhabitants of Vaikuntha who do service, and some may be assisting, you know, what do you call it? Ila, some are Pushti, some like this, Lakshmi, and all these things like that. But otherwise, they're not like the queens in Dwarka. Then they'll have you. People can become queens. People can become the maidservants of the queens. Is that the kind of thing like that? Yeah. So that's not happening. Well, technically, the queens they can't become, but they can become maidservants of the queens.
So Vaikuntha is very straightforward.
Yeah, that's why. Anytime you're dealing with that, it's fairly easy to understand. When you get into Vrindavan, then that's where it's more difficult, because two things that are contradictory are going on very comfortably with each other in one at the same time. So that's the whole point. If they're totally surrendered, there's no one more surrendered to them, but at the same time they're getting upset with Krishna and telling him what to do and this and that. So the normal thing is Vaikuntha is that He's the supreme. They're more surrendered than their you know, the dasya rasas, you know, to the extreme, you know. But it's not. That's the whole point. Is it's not really the flavor, because dasya and the shanta, those are flavors that are there in Vaikuntha. Those are the prominence. So that's where, you know, everybody there is, will be, you know, that's where your jivas are. And then the others, they may be your eternal associates, and then there'll be some, you know, other jivas in those places and things like that. But can it be assistant? But in Vrindavan, those are generally the energies, and the devotees are all in the upper three. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It means the jiva wants to attain to the position in Vraj, it will generally be in friendship, parental, or conjugal. There may be some in dasya, but generally not. You know, so all the dasya and all the others taken care of by the internal potency. They're expansions of the internal potency, and they're not jivas. Mm-hmm. Well, in Vaikuntha, all the shanta ras and all the dasya ras, those are jivas. There may be also internal potency, but the point is you know, does this make any sense? Okay. Not, how you say, not frazzled the gray matter with, because it's straight, it's Vaikuntha, so it makes sense.
Yeah, it also makes sense that Mahaprabhu came with the four rasas, because Shanta, he didn't pay any attention in his pastimes, but those four, and then specifically in Raj, mood. So now it makes more sense, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the point is all those things are there. All rasas are there, but it's just a matter of where they stand out, where they shine. Like, because friendship and everything's official, that's not really where it happens. But dasya and shanta, that's works perfectly there. But when you get into friendship and above, then it has to be that more relaxed kind of mood. And so then in Dwarka and Mathura, you get it half-half. You know, you see he's dealing and all that very personally and all these things, but at the same time as, you know, when these Aishwarya things come, they get excited. That's the difference. Well, you see, is the, you know, it's like how you say. He, you know, he gets bewildered, but then when these come up, then he's got that clarity.
Yeah.
But when Mother Jashoda, when this comes, then it's they become bewildered. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The same with the gopis. They look at the forearm deity and then they
Yeah. But then see, it's not important to them. It's not like, wow, check out this guy. You know, you know, they don't go up and take some selfies. No, they don't do that. They just keep on walking.
Keep on serving for Krishna.
Yes, like that.
In the Vaikuntha scenario, can it sometimes happen that the servant takes the role of a master also? Because
the servant takes the role of a master in Vaikuntha.
Yeah, because many of the pastimes of Brahmacharya, you know, you have devotees where they...
But that's devotees with devotees, not devotees with the
devotees
Lord.
Devotees with the Lord. Where they dominated, you know, either Balaji or Ramanath Swami, Varadraj Swami, three, four cases.
Depends on what their position is. But who are they?
One was Anandacharya.
Yes, but who are they in Vaikuntha?
It
means if you're going to get into that, better know who they are. See, if Ramanujacharya is Anantasesh, then who are these other guys? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Nila is the Lord's sword.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to kind of know the position. Because it's not that people aren't close and they have these kind of pleasant personal dealings, but it still has that element of that formality in there, that it's still up to the Lord. It's just it's not that they can't happen, it's just not free. Does that make any sense or not?
The last statement I didn't follow.
Did anybody follow?
I couldn't hear that part.
It's freedom, they're saying.
Means the environment is not relaxed, it will be formal. Even if they are, you know, saying this and that and so many things. Does that make some sense? Yeah, it'll still have that flavor. It's not that there won't be a wide range, but the point is we're not trying to bring out the salient features of that realm, unless that's the realm you want to go to. Does that make sense? So Raghunath Das points out, don't get attracted by there. Because the point is anything that's there is going already on in Goloka. And whatever's happening in Goloka is at its perfection in Braj. So that's what's being offered, but, you know. Does that make sense? If you like what Madhvacharya or Ramanujacharya is presenting, then hey, go for it. But does that make sense? But just because it's there doesn't mean it's the same. The one is informal, the other is formal. Otherwise, how is there majesty? You know, it's not that within majesty that there's not some niceness and some pleasantness. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because the point is it's a matter of flavor. That's what the Jnana Shakti is what's the flavor? Is the basis sweetness or is the basis majesty? So Vaikuntha, it's majesty, it's just a matter of how much sweetness is added. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, how you call it? Yeah. So that's the point. Chapter 40, The Prayers of Akura. Those who are bereft of your transcendental association, being just like foolish creatures, leave a place covered by water, nourished vegetation, and goes in search of water in the desert. Yeah, that's foolish. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 14th chapter, Akura pays respects to Krishna and praises him by glorifying his object of worship and the process of worship. Sardartha Darshani 10:41. Akura prayed. Brahma, who created this visible world, emanated from the lotus navel of the Supreme Lord. The five elements of physical nature, the five corresponding objects of perception, the 10 senses, the ego, the total nature, the primeval creator, and the demigods all originate from his bodily limbs. He cannot be known by sensory knowledge, and thus even Brahma and other demigods are ignorant of his real identity. Different classes of people worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in different ways. Fruit of workers worship him by performing Vedic sacrifices, philosophers by renouncing material work and pursuing spiritual knowledge, yogis by meditating, Shaivites by worshipping Lord Vishnu, Vaishnavas by following the injunctions of such scriptures as Pancharatra, and other saintly persons by worshipping him as the original form of the self, of the material substance, and of the controlling demigods. Just as rivers flow from various directions into the ocean, the worship of those who dedicate themselves to these various entities finds its ultimate purpose with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Right, so they're worshiping. Yeah, okay, we'll get it. The form of the total universe, the Virat Rup, is imagined to be the form of Lord Vishnu, like aquatics moving about in water, or like tiny insects burrowing in an Udumbara fruit. All living beings move about within the Lord. These living beings, bewildered by his Maya, wander along the path of material work, falsely identifying with body, home, and so forth. Right? So the whole total energy, what we call the material energy, is Krishna's energy. And it's what's making everything work. So they're approaching the material energy and worshipping a particular aspect of the material energy because of a result that they can get from that material energy. But that potency is Krishna. That process is Krishna. The results they want to get is Krishna. So that's why it says like fish, aquatics moving about in water. They don't move around outside of that. They only move within the water. So whatever the body of water, the aquatics are all in there. They have their whole scene and their whole world, what's going on, but it's all within the water. Or these tiny insects burrowing in an Udumbra fruit. Everything they do, their whole life, everything is within that fruit. They don't have the life outside of the fruit. You know, in other words, if you ask, is there life beyond the Udumbra fruit? No. It's only within. So they don't do those things. Right? Yeah. Okay, so they wander along the path of material work, falsely identifying with body, home, and so forth. They don't know what they're dealing with is Krishna, so they only identify it by the external form, not by the potencies and the source of those potencies. Okay. Under the sway of illusion, a foolish person may overlook a reservoir of water covered by grass and leaves, and instead run after a mirage. Similarly, living entities, being caught in the grip of ignorance, abandon Lord Vishnu and become attached to their bodies, homes, and so on. Such faithful servants of their senses cannot take shelter of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. So it's not that this concept of devotional service is technically foreign to us. It's just actually what the devotion is supposed to be for. And what is actually service, that's what's new. Yes.
We move within material, and it's only apparently 25% of the whole cosmos.
Yes.
So the 75% is much bigger.
Yes. Means so this is 1/4 of an unlimited,
yes.
And that's 3/4 of unlimited.
Yeah. So in that realm, it's even more varieties. So for us,
I think it's better variety, not more. like they probably don't need worms and stool. So those kind of varieties, and I say, except for the gopis, you know, harassing mother-in-laws, you know, they don't really need them. Vaikuntha, they probably don't even have them. Everyone's married there, but there's probably no parents. You know. It's Vaikuntha. There's no babies. There's no. It's just Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha. No, Kunta means anxiety. Vai, no. No, but if ladies, there's no thing of babies. There's no mothers-in-law. There's nothing like that. And you're eternally youthful and all that. And you go and serve Lord Vishnu. Basically, that's the point of view.
So the question is, it's even more difficult to be fixed in that realm because it's so vast and there's so many varieties.
But you'll only be involved in the variety that is in connection with your relationship. Does that make sense? Like Mother Jashoda's house, there's 100 rooms in it.
Yeah.
So she'll deal with the 100 rooms. But the cowherd boys who come for lunch with Krishna, they don't. They'll only deal with those areas that are for guests. So the front part of the house, so a few of the rooms. But when it comes to the forest, they deal with all of that. The Mother Jashoda doesn't. So the variety that's there then is in context of the particular rasas that are dealing with it. It means there's naturally overlapping areas. But it's within that. And then the variety means the subtleties of the variety that are ever inspiring. So it's not that... It means certain aspects of here you don't require. You know, like termites eating your fence over there. That we don't require in the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? But there's some concept of these things there, because it's a reflection. But it's just how it works in, so there everything works nicely. just like it's plain, there's no dogs there, but there's something kind of like dogs there. Probably they don't slobber. You know. But it's what you hear, that's what is noticed, that's what they deal with. So they don't within that, all the nice trees and gardens and everything like that, and all the different aspects is there. You get unlimited variety within that. How to, the slight adjustments and what flavors that gives and all that. Does that make any sense? Or we're,
yeah. I'm just thinking is that, you know.
No, but I'm saying it's not more difficult because you only work within your area. It's like, let's say, okay, you take a big city, right? But what you know of the city, that's all that you move in. So you could be living in that city for, you know, your whole life and not know about that one restaurant on the other side of town that's fabulous. That's someone else's world. You know what I'm saying? You just move within your scene and that's it. You have the few streets you move on, the few places you go, the few friends, the office. You know, you may walk at this particular park but not that park. So even though there's so much, it's in the context of the particular devotees and the realm they're in, the rasa they're in, like that. So I'm saying it's not that you'll be more bewildered. I'm coming from that angle. It won't be more difficult for the devotee because it all is in perfect support of that particular rasa. That's what it's there for, to enhance, to bring out. You know, so it'd be just like, okay, let us say we have some very refined, you know, cultural environment. So for someone who's cultured, right, then and trained, then that's a very natural environment for them, even though it may be very sophisticated, right? But you bring in a, you know, a bull or an elephant, then there's a bit of a problem, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not going to be a problem. Someone who's not trained. So that's why you have the aspect of Gokula, because then you get trained. So you can actually work within and use the whole environment in connection with Krishna. Because here we're trying to use the whole environment connected to ourselves, but there you're trying to use it for Krishna. So it's so much easier. It's just like, have you ever had the experience where there's something going on? And let's say like a game and others are playing the game and you can always tell exactly what should be done and they never do it.
Yeah.
And you think, this is so stupid. But then when you're doing it, you can't see and they can all see.
Yeah.
So when you're working, if you're doing something for someone else, it's always easier. The head's clear. So when everything's for Krishna, then it's so clear, the vision. So you can see how perfectly everything can be used in Krishna's service. But when it's about ourselves, that's when the vision becomes clouded. And the more it's about ourselves, the more clouded it becomes, until it's so clouded that we are a rock. You know? And then there's some idiot kids with a stick picking us up and playing ball, right? Is that... So you don't have to be in anxiety, that'll be tougher there, because that's the whole point of Gokul, is you're trained. Then when you go there, then you know what to do. Because all you're going to do is do what you were doing in Gokul. So that's why Goloka and Gokul are the same. The difference is in Goloka only trained persons are there, and Gokula then untrained persons can be there. But they come to the point of training. But they're getting, it's on the job training. So there's no difference in that way between Gokul and Golok, just that there's no newbies there. So, does that make sense? Yes? Okay. Similarly, living entities caught in the grip of ignorance abandon Lord Vishnu and become attached to their bodies, homes, and so on. Such faithful servants of their senses cannot take shelter of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. only if, by his mercy, they get the association of saintly devotees, will their material entanglement end. Only then can they develop Krishna consciousness by serving the Lord's pure devotees. Right? So it's by the Lord's grace, when he sees that someone's actually interested in giving up, you know, they're reducing their faith in their senses, then, and they think that, you know, what's the alternative of what's actually going on, then Krishna puts them in contact, but it's only by the association of the devotees. So when Krishna sees that we're interested, he puts us in contact with the devotees. Then we're able to advance. So that's the only process. There isn't some other process. So it's all personal. Krishna as a person puts us as a person in contact with the devotees as people. So it's a purely personal process. Okay, Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 to 30, the prayers of Akura. What's after Shloka Anusharanam? What's generally after Shloka Anusharanam?
Summary of verses.
No, isn't Shloka Anusharanam summary of verses? And then what's after that?
We start with the verses.
We just start with the verses. There's not another heading. Is there another heading, or there's not?
There's no heading.
There's no heading. Oh, okay. So. Okay, so in Shloka Anusharanam, then you can have a summary of the verses. And then you have the verses themselves. Didn't there used to be a different heading for that? For the verses? No? Okay.
But here we do not have it.
That I know. I'm asking in a general chapter, what's after Shloka Anusharanam?
Directly we start like this.
Okay.
We get a chapter as questions and answers. Someone is.
Oh, okay. That's if there is one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like this. Yeah.
Shloka Anusharanam. Then we go straight into it. Oh, okay. Cool. Sri Akura said, I bow down to you, the cause of all causes, the original and inexhaustible Supreme Person, Narayana. From the whirl of the lotus born from your navel, Brahma appeared. And by his agency, this universe has come into being. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, and its source, false ego, the Mahatattva, the total material nature and her source, the Supreme Lord's Purusha expansion, the mind, the senses, the sense objects, and the senses presiding deities, all these causes of the cosmic manifestation are born from your transcendental body. The total material energy and these other elements of creation certainly cannot know you as you are, for they are manifested in the realm of dull matter. Since you are beyond the modes of nature, even Lord Brahma, who is bound up by these modes, does not know your true identity. The BBT purport states, God is transcendental to material nature. Unless we also transcend the limited consciousness of material existence, we cannot know him. Even the greatest living entity in the universe, Brahma, cannot understand the Supreme unless he comes to the platform of pure Krishna consciousness. Sri Akura continued, pure yogis worship you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by conceiving of you in the threefold form comprising the living entities, the material elements that constitute the living entities' bodies, and the controlling deities of those elements. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though no one knows you, those who receive results from you, who give all results, and those who worship some object actually worship you. First, the followers of Shankya and Yoga are described. Brahma and others, Yoginaha, worship the Lord, Ishwar, as Paramatma, Mahapurusha, the witness of the Adhyatmak Adibhuta and Adidaiva. Right, so, you have the Adhyatmak Adidaivak and Adibhutik. Right, so, you're getting all these. You're getting those who see the different aspects. The Shankya aspect is there, what we got in the first verses. Right? and then and Brahma and all that, then the yogis, and then you come up to the point where they see is how everything's working by this adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautic. So when we're dealing with the creation, you generally see that's a very major aspect, because you always have these three features, and how the Lord features where those three apply, then that's the science. Does that make sense? Because we're used to just the one adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautic kleshas. But this adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautic applies to everything. But the klesha is the one that we know, because that one's, you know, close to home, right? Like that. Sri Akura continued. Brahmanas who follow the regulations concerning the three sacred fires worship you by chanting mantras from the three Vedas and performing elaborate fire sacrifices for the various demigods, who have many forms and names. In pursuit of spiritual knowledge, some persons renounce all material activities, and having thus become peaceful, perform the sacrifice of philosophic investigation to worship you, the original form of all knowledge. Footnote 28. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others by performing severe austerities. By practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. Bhagavad Gita 4:25 and 28. So, okay. Srila Sridhar Swami explains. Verse 4 showed how the followers of Shankya worship him. Verse 5 shows how the followers of Karma worship him. Verse 6 shows how the Jnanis worship him. Okay, so all these different, they're all worshiping the Lord. But these you will consider progressive, right, and human. Like that, because they're accepting the Vedic literatures, the Vedic injunctions, and the Vedic knowledge, and according to that, then they're approaching the Lord. But every living entity is actually worshiping the Lord, but just how outside of these, then these are, it's not recommended for humans, right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole aspect, is everybody is worshiping the Lord, because the Lord is all these different things that are there. They are the individual, they are the goal of that individual, they are the process to gain that, they are the environment in which they function, they are the ingredients of the environment. So Krishna is all of these things. And so then according to the particular living entity and their conditioning, then they will be worshiping the Lord. So as we see, this has come up from Brahma. This was brought up. It's mentioned before, but it's not brought so much to the front. But from the Brahma Lila, we see that. It was mentioned before. Again, I think the gopis mentioned it. Now Akura is mentioning it. So it's just, in other words, those from the spiritual world, they understand that since there is only Krishna, then everybody is only worshiping Krishna. Because there is nothing else. Right? If you say that he is everything, then that means there can't be something else that they can be worshiping. But unless they understand him in his personal form, then you're not really given you don't get the results of bhakti. Right? So the yogis, they get their yogic result of mystic siddhis, the jnanis get theirs of liberation, the karmis get theirs of material facility. Because that's all the farther. They're worshiping Krishna, but only up to that point. Right? So just like, let's say, the karmi, they come to the temple, they bring all nice paraphernalia, they do all the pujas right, just so that they can then progress materially. Right? So they're worshiping the Lord, they're approaching the Lord, but their only purpose is to get material facility. So as soon as that material facility is gained, that particular worship stops. Right? So it's not that they're using bhakti, but it's not that that bhakti is for Krishna as a person and pleasing Krishna as a person. It's a bhakti towards Krishna in the form that they want, in the goal that they want. Right? So if it's money, they're showing bhakti to money. Right? Any good businessman has serious bhakti towards money. Right? You know what I'm saying? You can joke about so many things, but you can't joke about money. Right? Because that's God. You don't joke about God. Does that make sense?
In God we trust.
Yes, in God we trust. Right on the money, right? It's the only place that is still left, right?
They're afraid to take it out.
Yeah, yeah, because, yeah, it means they brought it up to take it out, but they don't, you know, because, yeah, what if we take it out and then they lose all their money, right? And then we won't have enough money to reprint it with that back on there, you know? So, yeah, does that make sense? So every living entity has devotion to the Lord in their area of interest or their worship of the Lord. But because that's all the farther they see the Lord, they don't actually get to the Bhagavan level. Because Bhagavan, that's where we call it bhakti. Because if we're dealing with Paramatma or Brahman, you know, and that's Brahman in knowledge and vidya or Brahman in avidya. So, but it's not, these are only aspects, features of Krishna. So it's all, we don't call it bhakti. So the yogis, we don't call it bhakti. The karmis, we don't call it bhakti. And definitely the vikarmis, we don't call it bhakti. But still, they have their commitment. Does that make sense? You know, the bug eating the new fresh leaf is with full attention, full concentration, and to the best of their ability, applying their efforts. So body, mind, and words, they're absorbed in Krishna as the nourishment that they get from this leaf. And so, therefore, because of this worship, they get their benefit. You understand? So only through bhakti do the processes of karma and jnana work. But the problem is as soon as, you know, they're worshiping Krishna as the leaf because of the nourishment they'll get, but as soon as they're full, they stop the worship. Now they worship Krishna as sleep. Right? And then, now they become a cocoon, right? Does that make sense? So we see what's happening here. So therefore, we see those from the spiritual world. That's how they see it, because that's actually what it is. But it takes a little bit more training to be able to appreciate that and see that. Otherwise, the tendency we have to, oh, because if it's all worship, then all the nonsense I want to do is also worship. So I'm fine, right? So that's why it's introduced later. It's mentioned before, because now we know it's whenever we say is, you know, everybody's part and parcel, everything was working within his creation, under his direction, under his laws, Krishna is everything, means, you know, that's what it's saying, but it won't be bring that out. What we see is that that now in the 10th canto, that aspect is being brought out. Does this make some sense? Yeah? No? Very good. Okay.
You explained once that twice in the Bhagavad Gita, the process of procreation is mentioned. Once in terms of kardamma, and other in terms of dharma viruddha kamosmi. So you explained that is Brahman, and this other thing is Krishna in Krishna consciousness.
Yes, it means it's both Krishna. The potency is there, but one will be lust, one will be dharma. Yes, so it's yeah.
I think also we studied in Vedanta Sutra that how Krishna is Anamaya, Pranamaya, Manamaya, Vijnanamaya, Anandamaya. And that according to their level of consciousness, little entities, they worship Lord in that form, although they don't know that's what they're doing.
Yes, yes, yes. Is that's why they're so committed to it. Otherwise, you know, how do you get out on a little dinghy out in front of this huge monster oil tanker and think that by staying out there with your placards and waving your arms you're actually going to change something other than the boat runs over your boat, you sink because you're out in the middle of the ocean and you drown. You know, so there must be some taste there in pranamoy that they're getting, and what will be there that the living entity could latch onto is such zeal, yes, that they risk their life for this, you know, because that's the point. Krishna is pranamoy, but you won't deal with Krishna as a person until you get to anandamoy. So the first four levels are material, and then only the fifth, that's where it's spiritual and transcendental. Yes.
Also, I'm thinking that we've given the chance to develop our personal relationship with Krishna through the spiritual master.
Mm-hmm.
However, for most everybody, it's a distant figure. It's not something that, you know, how you say, accessible. It's more of a concept than the person.
Means guru.
Yeah, guru.
But it's both. Because there's the concept, but that concept is coming to you through that person.
Yeah.
Because
but then we choose the concept part, but the personal part stays distant. Because personal means it's personal. And it's somewhat very... It's difficult.
Yeah, but that with time, as we practice, then that will go away. That won't be the problem. It's just a matter of... Because we're not... Even though we deal as persons, we talk about as persons and, you know, all these kind of things, we're not actually used to actual real personal.
Yeah.
So it'll come with time. Right? It's just a matter. So we practice the process, then it will become more and more clear. But otherwise, that's the point. The instructions of the spiritual master. That's what is accessible at all times, all places, all circumstances. That's why Prabhupada says the vani is more important than the bapu, because sometimes you can appreciate the bapu. If they happen to be there, you happen to be able to have that interaction. But the vani can be appreciated all the time. So that's why the emphasis is always there on the vani. So there is a individual who represents that vani that's coming down from the original, you know, guru or Krishna, then down through the acharyas, and then it comes to us. So that the main accessibility is through instruction, not through the vapu. Because that's sometimes, you know, it is as it is. Sometimes the guru is able to come to the area where you are, and sometimes not. You know, or even if they come, you may be busy doing other things. But instruction, you can always take advantage of.
I was also thinking is that instructions, it's more of a passive principle. When the guru as a person is more an active principle, then he can guide us. All instructions, they also can guide us, but then give us the food for this level of development and like this.
That's nourished by the association of the devotees. So whether the devotee is the spiritual master or not, by associating with devotees, then we're able to see the application of that, because everybody's trying to apply the instructions of the spiritual master. And so then what we see, then that is, that inspiration. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why there's that whole process. Is there. You have the founder, Acharya, then you have Siksha and Diksha gurus who give the relevant instruction. Then we have the third level of the preachers and other senior devotees who then help us, you know, appreciating the instructions that we've gained and that come from the founder Acharya, that are given from the previous Acharyas headed by Srila Rupa Goswami, that's given by Lord Chaitanya, like this. So the idea is that we put ourselves, why the importance of the association of devotees is because then we're always in contact with those instructions and the application of those instructions. So that's why it's hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. So one is we have the advantage of that we have the purport, so then we're always in association. Then we hear those purports in association. So we get that double benefit. Right. But, and then when there's discussions like that, then it brings out more. Right. So we, Yes, triple.
Why would Akura sometimes many very dense devotees in Bhagavatam, they pray like that? And it's very technical?
Why wouldn't they?
No,
the prayer is more technical and philosophical and not much about their own relationship with the Lord.
But this is indicative of his relationship.
That I'm hearing from far away going to... My point is, if he has his relationship with Krishna and he prays to him, in my mind it could be more personal.
But this is personal.
This is generic. This is generic.
General. Okay, let's take an example here. This is what's being thought. I'm somehow or another not in the mood to cook tonight, and I'd really rather do something else, and I kind of remember that there was one restaurant that we went to before, and I thought that that was really, really nice, and so it would actually be nice to just get out of the house and go to that restaurant for dinner. Okay? This is what the thought, right? Then a certain personage walks in the door, and then what is spoken is, you know, I think we never go out. And then all the rest of the dots have to be filled in by the person who walked in the door. So is that just generic and impersonal, or?
No, that's
okay. You understand? So the point is you're dealing with devotees that have this aspect of majesty. So this greatness of the Lord and how he does everything and all that, now is that not going to be mentioned? So it's just part of their flavor. Because you'll see they'll go back and forth between the grandeur of the Lord and then the sweetness of the Lord. That's the thing. Vaikuntha it'll just be grandeur. Dwarka it'll be grandeur and sweetness, and Braj it'll be sweetness. The grandeur is unlimited. You know, and there's major aspects in which he deals, but that's always appreciated. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that as of, you know, everybody uses the same thing because, you know, it's like, hey, you know, that guy just for the anniversary bought, you know, some ornaments for his wife and all that. But, you know, for our anniversary, it should be something totally different. We don't need ornaments. We don't need saris. We don't need this. We don't need that. We just need something that's totally unrelated. Like, let's say, a lacquered scarab beetle from Egypt. Who are those devotees? Anyway. Oh, okay. Nittai and company. Doing some variety of song and dance over there. Yes? Or we don't mind that that guy got ornaments and...
Guy?
Well, that guy got ornaments. He isn't just that guy. Your own guy, now he's got to get you ornaments, but they have to be better than those ones. But, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, they talk about the different things, the position of the Lord, the expansions of the Lord, whatever he does in that, but it's about the taste that's there, the flavor that's there. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like music. It's seven notes. It says, okay, they wrote a song and they used all those seven notes, so we have to use none of those notes. We have to use something else. You know, we'll use 8 through 14. You know? Does that make sense? So it's the variety that's there within it. So in prayer, there's generally this aspect of the contradictory aspects of the Lord and how everything's reconciled. That's a very common thing. You know, and how he's the creator, maintainer, destroyer, how he's beyond... But which points they'll bring out, then you'll see generally each set of prayers that has something unique. That's why, because otherwise they're exactly the same, they most likely wouldn't be mentioned. But they're bringing out some different views, so therefore, because of the vichar, then Sukadeva Goswami is speaking them. Is that? It's just that, you know, we're not necessarily so used to it, so then we think it's always the same thing. But,
you know. About what Prabhu's point was that for us, Guru is a concept and is not exact.
Guru is a concept.
Guru.
Guru, okay.
It's just a concept and he's not interacting
oh,
with...
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. They're the same, right?
Google. You're not interacting with us and not so much personal interaction, not so much personal...
Yeah, but the point is who's the person? Who's the person? The earth, the water, the fire, the air, the ether? You know?
Soul.
The soul. Right? So the point is who needs to have that interaction?
The body.
Yeah, the subtle body, the emotions, the this and that. Point is if an instruction is given, that's for the eternal benefit of the soul, that means it's always personal, it's always there. So we always have that benefit. But we associate with whoever we can to be able to appreciate that benefit. By associating with the devotees, then we can appreciate that benefit that we get. Does that make sense? Just like how much association did Srila Prabhupada have directly with his guru?
Not more than 10 times.
Yeah. Something very short, you know, the instruction about, you know, preaching in the English world, you know, publish books. If you get any money, publish books. You know, just a few, but then everything's built on that. And Prabhupada always felt he was with his spiritual master. So that's the whole point. One can always be with if one sees that way. Is that?
So Maharaj, what should we do about such aspiring disciples who come to us and want the diksha from the Guru? And they have this sort of mentality that the Guru should be with us and this and that. Should we just tell them, like...
Then, how you say? They just have to seek out Vaishnavas that they're comfortable being in their association and get all those things from them. You understand? Because that's not actually the duty of the Guru. The Guru's there to bring about the revolution in consciousness. You know, the change in consciousness, the upliftment of the consciousness. And then show how that one can do that in whatever environment you're in. But it's not their business to take care of all the emotional needs. That's what the Varnashram system is for. Is if we have these emotional needs, emotional, physical, intellectual needs, that's taken care of by the Varnashram system. It's the only scientific system that deals with those. Because it's the only system that can deal with them and deal with Krishna consciousness. Right, modern society feels it can deal with them, but it doesn't really, and it can't deal with Krishna consciousness. Right, so you lose on both sides. Well, the Vedic system, it can deal with all those as good as it can get in the material world. Right, there's a limit to how good it can get, and at the same time, it is compatible with bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's why we never prefer modern methods. We might catch something from them, some element of art from them, but the science, why would we get it from them? Why would we try to get science from a non-science? Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of then taking advantage of the association of the bodhis, the community of Vaishnavas. That's where you get all your emotional input and this and that and the pat on the back and everything's going to be all right and all that kind of stuff. That's important, but the point is that doesn't come from Guru. That comes from other members of the community. But to have that, then you have to have respect of authority. So that means you can't just have respect for Guru as authority. You have to have respect for, you know, everybody in their capacity. So the more you can expand that respect, then the more you can get that advantage that we're looking for, right? Because if there's rights that you want, they only come along with obligations, right? You want a car, you get the car without paying money. No? So then why, nothing, you can't get anything for free. Right? So therefore, why would you get rights without obligations? So people want, they want facility without obligation. So that's why they can't get anything. You know, everyone wants everything for nothing. Does that make sense? Hence the, if you like it, put a ring on it. Yes.
We've heard that the Sambandha Gyan is given by Dikshatur, and then Adiveya is by Shiksha. And the Prayojana?
That's discussed in the other two, because the Prayojana is what's experienced. Because the Sambandha Gyan includes what is the Prayojana, what is the Abhideya.
Yeah.
You know, what is the identity, what's the attitude, what's the knowledge? So the Sambandha Gyan includes everything. Siksha means then, while you're applying that Sambandha Gyan, then how to efficiently apply it. And then Prayojan has already been defined. It means what is knowledge has already been defined. The other part is experience. Just like in the Bhagavatam verses that explain the position of the gopis, right, and a little bit of the understanding of their experience, but and then we're trying to explain that, and it wasn't going very well, right? You know, it's frying pan into the fire kind of stuff like that. Then when you go into the drama, then all it is the experience of it. It's not being explained. It's only the experience. So it was already defined by Sukadev Goswami what it is. And then through Rupa Goswami's drama, then you could experience what it is. You can't describe the experience. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, you can define the knowledge connected to it, or the knowledge used to apply it. But the experience of it, that can't be defined. You have symptoms of it. That's why we say the Sanchari Bhavas, those are only symptoms. But what's being experienced, that can't be explained. All they can say is the highest ecstasy. Or like, so since we're looking for the knowledge of it, we're thinking, you know, where's the fun in that? But the point is that you can't explain the bliss that they're feeling. The Acharyas mentioned that. But then they go on to explain the symptoms. And so we'll take the symptoms as the volume. But no, the experience is the volume. Does that make sense?
But isn't it Sadhu Sangha is all about experience?
So from Sadhu Sangha, then you gain experience. But that experience, that can't be explained. It can only be said it's there. Guys, serious. Determined. You understand? So Sambandha Gyan already defines all four aspects. Right? But and Abhideya is then the actual practical application of that knowledge. And so any instruction how to better apply it and everything like that. But the Prayojana, then you'll get the results that have been explained in the Sambandha Gyan. But the difference is then there's the experience of it. So it's not that you can't explain it. That's why there's no emphasis put on the Prayojana Guru. We just see the Prayojana Guru experiencing it, and we can see the symptoms of that and how he applies that into the various situations they're in. Is that make sense? So that's the... Yeah. So in other words, let's say someone who's good at explaining or narrating or that, when they can create an environment in which you do experience, even though they can't explain it, then we'll say that that is good. So we see Rupa Goswami then going through the pastime, then you experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's in the process. So as the process is going on, the experience is there. Process finishes, the experience is not there. Then you go on with the process of remembering. Then in that way it's there. So that's why the Abhideya is actually the central feature. So Rupa Goswami is the main guru. Right? So Sanatana Goswami is the senior guru, but actually Rupa Goswami is the main guru, or the central guru. But without knowledge, you can't apply. So that's why that's first. You know, so that's the whole point. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? So, right? Yeah. So you have to have you have to have the prajapati. Then from the prajapati, then you get the egg. Then from that, you get the chicken. Sri Akura continued. And yet others, whose intelligence is pure, follow the injunctions of Vaishnava scriptures promulgated by you. Absorbing their minds and thought of you, they worship you as the one Supreme Lord, manifesting in multiple forms. Footnote 29. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute, and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. Bhagavad Gita 4.24. BBT Purport states, the word samskritatmanaha, they whose intelligence is pure, is significant here. It implies that the worshippers mentioned before have not completely purified their intelligence of material contamination, and thus worship the Lord indirectly. Those who are purified, however, directly worship the Lord, either as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, or as one of his various plenary forms, such as Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajumna, or Aniruddha, as indicated here. So, in other words, when those, as we were discussing before, every living entity is worshiping the Lord, and to that degree that they are absorbed in that and committed to it, they're getting that reciprocation. But the difference is, but it's still not called bhakti. Why? Because it's indirect. Because it's about Krishna, but in the form of his energies and his potencies and qualities. It's not about him as the person who is the, you know, the source of all that, or the owner of all that. Does that make sense? So that's how you can tell the difference between where it's bhakti, because it's direct, and where it's not, where it's indirect. So only when the indirect is connected up to the direct, then we call it bhakti. But if the indirect is being followed on its own, then, right, so that's the confusion. Since we're used to only indirect, and then we get confused if an indirect can be engaged in the Lord's service, then we take it just by applying that indirect, it is devotional service. But no, it's only devotional service when it's connected to the direct. Right? But we're not used to direct, because direct means Krishna, and we're used to the indirect. The secondary. We're not used to the primary as for Krishna. Sri Akura continued. There are still others who worship you, the Supreme Lord, in the form of Lord Shiva. They follow the path described by him, and it interpreted in various ways by many teachers. But all these people, my Lord, even though those who have turned their attention away from you and are worshipping other deities are actually worshipping you alone. O embodiment of all the demigods, as rivers born from the mountains filled by the rain flow from all sides into the sea, so do these paths in the end reach you, O Master. Footnote 30. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. I am in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires. But in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kuti, but they do so in a wrong way. Bhagavad Gita 7:20-22 and 9:23. Right, so Krishna himself is making that point, so that's being brought out now, we see very nicely by Akura, is that everybody's worshipping Krishna, but they don't understand that, so they don't get that credit because it's indirect. And then coming in contact with the bona fide devotees, then we learn about the direct path, how to worship Krishna directly, you know, as a person, and is in a relationship with that person. Then that's devotion. Otherwise, then there's all these other paths. Yes.
So when Srila Rupa Goswami describes pure devotional service, he gives one positive, one negative. So this indirect missing both points, actually. Because it's not towards Krishna as a person, and it's with the desire.
Yeah, it's with karma and gyan.
Exactly.
It's not about Krishna. It's not conscious of Krishna. It's not favorable to Krishna. And it's fully with karma or gyan or both. So that's what we're used to. So that's the point of not doing anything with karma or gyan. We're not used to that. Being conscious of somebody else that's favorable to them, only if it's about us. So that's why we could go, okay, we're conscious of God. We're dealing favorably towards God. Like, you know, any Hindu who's properly following the scriptures, goes to the temple, worships the deity, they will be conscious of God and what they're doing is favorable. But it's not free from karma and gyan. So that's why all that together then makes for pure devotional service. Yeah. So as materialists, then we're kind of at a disadvantage because we're not actually used to the concept like that. But by the association of the devotees, then we start to slowly, you know, catch, well, maybe it's possible, maybe it'll work. That's then what we're... That's why then all the, you know, regular reading and associating is to develop that aspect. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that worship of demigods is also indirectly worship of the Supreme Lord, but such worship is not orthodox, because the worship of a Lord is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Demigods, such as Brahma and Shiva, are incarnations of the material qualities, which are also emanations from the body of Narayana. Actually, there is no one existing before the creation except Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The worship of a demigod is not on the same level as worship of Narayana, because you're only dealing with a part of the Lord, and you're not seeing the Lord. If you see the Lord, like Akura, he's mentioning these aspects, but in connection with the person who's the source of all this. So that's then where the personal comes in. You just mentioned these aspects without, you know, him as the source or the bhakti as the purpose, then it's less personal. Akura said, although the minds of those who are devotees of the demigods are fixed on a particular demigod, because you are the supersoul of all living entities, including the demigods, worship of the demigods indirectly goes to you. Sometimes, after flowing down from the mountains during the rainy season, small rivers fail to reach the sea. Some reach the sea and some do not. Similarly, the worshippers of the demigods may or may not reach you. There is no guarantee. Their success depends on the strength of their worship. Right? So, that they take up that worship and they're actually trying to deal with the ultimate. Then if that is serious within them, then they may reach the sea. They may with time come and then have that seriousness, meet the Vaishnavas, then actually understand the position. But if they don't, then we see that it all ends up in somebody's field somewhere and grows bananas or some rice or something. Right? You know, it's like the Jordan River. I don't know that it meets the sea, right? No, because the water all gets used before it gets there, right? According to the Vedic principles, when a worshipper worships a particular demigod, he also conducts some ritual for Narayana, Yageshwara. For, as it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, the demigods cannot fulfill the desires of their worshippers without the sanction of Narayana or Krishna. The exact words used in the Bhagavad Gita are Mayaiva Vihitan Hitan, which mean that the demigods can award some benediction after being authorized by the Supreme Lord. When a demigod worshipper comes to his senses, he can reason as follows. The demigods can offer benedictions only after being empowered by the Supreme Lord, so why not worship the Supreme Lord directly? Such a worshipper of the demigods may come to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but others who take the demigods as all in all cannot reach the ultimate goal. Right? So, in other words, if you see properly, that's the advantage of the Vedic, because all the Vedic literatures will point this out. But because that's not what generally most people are interested in, it's not made as obvious as it could be. Narad Muni made the point to Vyasadeva. If the Mahabharata is, yes, someone who is a devotee will appreciate the Mahabharata and get so much benefit and see how, all the essence of the scriptures. But someone who's not a devotee won't realize that devotional service is actually the goal. Therefore, you have to write to the essence of the scriptures in a way that that is the point. Then he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, six types of worship have been described. Among them, first, there are three types, yoga, karma, and jnana. According to Diksha, there are three types, Vaishnava, Shaiva, and Kshaudras, minor devatas. Okay. Yoga, karma, and jnana, and then, that required Diksha, Vaishnava, Shaiva, and Kshaudras, minor devatas. Lou, no questions. Sri Akura continued. Goodness, passion, and ignorance, the qualities of your material nature, entangle all conditioned living beings, from Brahma down to the non-moving creatures. I offer my obeisances to you, who, as the supreme soul of all beings, witnesses everyone's consciousness with unbiased vision. The current of your material modes, produced by the force of ignorance, flow strongly among the living beings who assume identities as demigods, humans, and animals. Fire is to be your face, is said to be your face, the earth your feet, the sun your eye, and the sky your navel. The directions are your senses of hearing, the chief demigods your arms, and the oceans your abdomen. Heaven is thought to be your head, and the wind your vital air and physical strength. The trees and plants are the hairs on your body, the clouds the hair on your head, and the mountains the bones and nails of you, the Supreme. The passage of day and night is the blinking of your eyes, the progenitor of mankind your genitals, and the rain your semen. All the worlds with their presiding demigods and teeming populations originate in you, the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead. These worlds travel within you, the basis of the mind and senses, just as aquatics swim in the sea or tiny insects burrow within an udumbara fruit. To enjoy your pastimes, you manifest yourself in various forms in this material world. And these incarnations cleanse away all the unhappiness of those who joyfully chant their glories. Right? So when you see the Supreme Lord himself and are always absorbed in the Supreme Lord's pastimes, then that cleanses away all the impurities that are in the heart, and then one is able to be very joyful in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, that's what it says. Three types of diksha. Because if you want really want to worship the benefit, that you have to be initiated into it.
And also like Nitya Seva, they just do like if somebody actually does it seriously, they are supposed to do
it. Yeah, they do it on their daily basis and this and that. So just like you have the you know, like it says the Vaishnava Shaivas and other minor devatas. So the those who are Panchopasanas, then they either, you know, do all those five or concentrate on one or like that, but they're initiated into that. and then they follow the rules and that to go along with it.
That's because they are supposed to worship Vishnu actually before the demigod.
Yeah, that's because you. But the idea is that at some point they'll wonder, why don't I just worship the Lord? They have to worship Shaligram. So all the offerings go to the Shaligram, then the remnants from that go to the demigod. Otherwise, why will the demigod accept it?
Then for them, that aspect that they worship Vishnu is just like part of karma.
Yes, yeah, just part of karma. That's what I was saying. Without bhakti, you can't actually make anything. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prima ki